was forced often to contend with those on the ground who were still demanding more change.
15 seconds.
I think it's good for there to be organizing outside of the administration. I think that that is good. So I think that Zoran and everyone from the campaign is very excited for there to be lots of levels and tiers of organizing.
Tasha Van Auken, we thank you very much for being with us. Congratulations on this momentous historic win. Field director for Zoran Mamdani's mayoral campaign. And that does it for our show. I'll be in Amsterdam, the Netherlands tomorrow at the largest international documentary film festival in the world. The film, Steal the Story, Please, will be playing twice. Go to our website at democracynow.org. I'm Mimi Goodman.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is a little show we like to call Genius Box, your Friday talk radio here in Portland, and also the world, and also beyond the world, probably.
Beyond the world.
I'm Althea.
Well, let's not give ourselves that much credit.
Okay. If you're calling from beyond the world, please.
Make it be known. I guess it will be made known.
And your name is?
Zorb.
No.
My name's Reed.
How you doing, Reed? You were on assignment last week.
I was on assignment.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I was visiting the International Space Station. Mm-hmm. I'm back.
Nice.
In orbit.
How's the gravity treating you?
It was good. Well, it's, you know, a little oppressive, but...
Sure.
boy, that sunrise off the ISS, we like to call it.
Sure.
It is.
I've heard it called.
Because it is. Right there. Pretty gorgeous.
Yeah.
Kind of indescribable. Kind of like a big, it's like big, yellow thing or
yeah,
kind
sure.
of orangish.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a bunch of black around it. That's the sky.
Okay. Well,
space.
Actually.
We call it space, the final frontier.
I can tell it's your first time at the International Space Station. Do you want to tell the people what we're doing on this show today?
Yeah, sure. We are talking.
Right, but like,
how specific do you want to get?
I would love like an overview. So, for example, if a listener is tuned in and they're wondering, hey, what are we going to talk? What can I look forward to in this episode? That's kind of what I'm hoping to hear.
Okay, so for the forward-thinking listener,
right?
We will. Okay, step one: introduction. 5 minutes allotted.
No. Now I'm feeling
we
like
have two and a half
much
minutes
detail.
Gone, so we have 2.5 more minutes for that. Then we'll have
detail.
Some. Headlines you might have missed.
Yep.
For the unobservant forward-thinking listener,
right.
Then we will put it to a song.
Right.
And Althea will freestyle over the song.
Mm-hmm. So look forward to that. Stay tuned, of course.
No, Althea's brought in a bunch of wood instruments and kind of pots and pans. She's
yep.
got a big barrel. She was just watching, I know, in the other room, she was watching Stomp. And
is
was
Stomp
working.
Still going? Are they still stomping?
They're still
I hope so.
They're still stomping, but with a with a more narrow reach.
Oh,
they're
why?
Stomping. They're
the
stomping.
Tariffs?
It's the tariffs.
It's the tariffs.
Recycled waste from
can't even get a metal trash can to bang around these days. It's despicable. Our engineer Nate is saying that Stomp is still going.
Our engineer Nate, thank you so much.
And look, that's very what a relief that Stomp is
still
stomping.
We've been informed that they will be in Portland.
Okay, great. All right, sorry for doubting you, Stomp. Jeez.
Yeah. So anyway, after Althea's song, then we will take some calls from you, and we'll be talking about a little call-in question.
Yeah, we're going to continue the conversation that Eliza and
I
had last week about lateral thinking and creative solutions, whether that's interpersonally or when confronting some of the political problems that were...
Some of our one or two problems of the day.
Yeah. And we might run out of time because we'll just solve them so quick. So anyway, stick around
for
that.
Yeah, I thought that you guys had solved them all last week.
No. We were talking about solving them, and then this week we'll probably solve them.
I see. Procrastinating, it sounds like.
Well, okay, then that's a third problem.
I didn't realize that the show is called Procrastination Box, but perhaps you decided for an alternative title for my week off. Interesting.
Right. Yeah, wouldn't want you in the procrastination box.
I slip into a habit that I have never practiced.
Yeah,
I'm so unfamiliar with. I wouldn't even know how to do it.
He's disgustingly prompt.
I'd probably procrastinating.
Yeah, well, can't stop what you never start.
Mm-hmm.
So, should we get into some of these local headlines we want to talk about?
Never cannot nip a bud that hasn't sprouted.
I guess that's true. I think.
Wait, no. Actually, that is exactly what the action is doing.
If you're a plant person, call in, please. Let us know if that's...
That might not go into the
good
the
pruning
lexicon
advice
of the
that one's not going to... Yeah.
The sayings book.
Yeah, people aren't going to pick up that idiom. Well, you know, and my thing is, let's always shop around
it
with idioms anyway.
It's an idiom, that one.
I get you. Well, one of the ones that we wanted to talk about this week, it was a spicy city council on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Many people there because of this sort of fall budget adjustment process that was going on.
Yeah.
And city councilor Angelita Murillo put forward an amendment to move around $4 million out of the budget for the impact reduction program.
That's right.
That does homeless camp sweeps, and put that towards rental assistance, food assistance, and refugee programs.
Yeah, I can't really imagine why we would want those resources dedicated there. Can't think of any sort of reason why we would maybe want to bolster those programs in the present moment.
Yeah. Well, and it's also the case that, you know, the council passed a balanced budget back in June, I believe, but then there's some money that has not shown up, or there's more things that were owed by the city that the council wasn't aware of. So there is like a need to kind of move some dollars around.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one thought of, you know, taking some money out of the impact reduction program.
And boy, did that rankle some
partially
ruffle some feathers, wrinkle some ankles.
partly spurred on by Portland Mayor Keith Wilson, who sent out an email to, I think, everybody. He has everyone's email.
A call to action.
I got the email.
I don't get emails.
Everybody. Oh, that explains a lot of what I've been trying to tell you. he sent out this email basically imploring people to come in
Protect our impact reduction program.
Please, they're going to make it illegal to pick up trash.
They're going to make it illegal to pick up trash.
And so the council took hours and hours of testimony on this, and the amendment ended up failing.
In a confusing vote, we were looking at it last... Well, not confusing, I guess. They failed to get the majority, but four
right,
people
but
absent.
Like four of the councilors had four left
councilors
by the time they
had
actually
left.
Took the vote. Because it's a, you know, when you get that sort of...
It's a school night.
It is a school... Well, it's, yeah, the level of vitriol. But it's like a long time to be in a meeting.
It is a long time to be in a meeting. But it does seem like, can't you Can't you just call in? Just or put your vote down before you leave?
Right on the slip of paper? I don't think you should put your vote down before you leave. Let me say that.
Okay.
But yeah, what
okay,
are you?
I'm sorry. Maybe that was a bit rash, but can't you call in?
Yeah.
You're still on planet Earth.
I still don't think telephones? It would have passed, to be honest.
No,
I think the real outcry against it. But
yeah
I mean, what was your awareness of it and what was your reaction to it?
Well, my awareness of it was pretty much the day of. I mean, we were talking about it before. Two different ways of addressing Portland's housing crisis, and those, you know, obviously suffering from it. Mayor Keith Wilson has obviously, as part of his program for being elected mayor, promised to build a certain number of temporary shelters, house people temporarily, and has built a certain amount of those shelters, mm-hmm. and they are standing.
By lot, there was a
50%.
Yeah, 50% empty.
60% empty.
On any given night. That
on
was
on any given night.
Like stats from like a month ago.
And that's because they are not a really an adequate solution.
They're not super desirable.
They are not desirable.
No.
It turns out that temporary housing is temporary.
And we should say, sorry, not just temporary as in like a month. It's like just temporary overnight.
As in, yeah.
You're back out
12 hours maybe?
It might even be less than 12.
Might even be less than 12 hours. So, yeah, you could see maybe, you know, lots of supply, little demand. You know, talking in Keith Wilson's business terms, maybe there's something wrong with the product. Or you can say there's something wrong with the people.
Right.
And maybe what they just don't have the right incentive to use my lovely temporary shelters.
Right. Which sweeps wasn't something that Wilson emphasized as.
No.
He was, you know.
But it's
as one of his
it's
campaign promises.
It's the subtle.
Right.
It's the subtle sort of, yeah, incentive or punishment that is being used now to.
Maybe we should clarify. Maybe some of the reasoning on both sides, people who were for the amendment, people who really came out against it. Why would you be opposed to sweeps? Well, it's kind of complicated, but also not really.
Yeah.
Mainly when people are swept, you're super likely to lose all of your stuff, whether that's your ID, important documents, like photographs, like really important personal stuff that you can't get back. Basically, the city will say that, oh, well, we like tag it all up, and if you just come by our warehouse in the next 30 days, you can get
it.
No, it's like crammed into trash bags and thrown away.
Yeah, there's been lots of reports about the
and lawsuits about that. People losing their medication.
Absolutely.
And right, if you're living outside, trying to stabilize your life in whatever respect. Losing all of that stuff is starting over. It also means, I mean, it's kind of just pushing people around, just moving them to a different space, not fixing the root problem, don't have somewhere to live. And it also makes it more difficult for outreach workers to work with people because sometimes people like disappear in this process because they've been pushed around. And then there's this extra work of, you know, maybe someone was going to get you a voucher or somebody was like working with you to get on SNAP or something. And now that person is lost or they don't have the necessary documents that they would need to like move along in a process.
So those are basically the only three problems with sweeps is that
it's also
people
really
harder
expensive.
To locate. It furthers their deprivation and I mean, it doesn't fix the problem.
Right.
So
that would be why to take the money away. But there's actually some confusion in the rhetoric about whether or not. So the impact reduction program also is sort of the overarching thing of like cleanup programs as well. So that's taking trash off the street, things like that, including.
Yeah, I think it's been around about 10 years or so, a little over 10 years at this
point.
Yeah,
and there's a bunch of subsidiary programs under it. Some of them, mm-hmm. like Glitter from GroundScore, is like a low barrier like employment situation, which yeah. actually in this council meeting ended up getting moved out of the impact reduction program at the request of one of the people who runs it, because they were like, I don't want to get caught up in this budget tug of war about
right.
this. Like, please put us
associated
in a different department.
With, because I will
did.
Say, from looking at the language of impact reduction,
yeah.
it's an interesting way. And if you look at the program, it says, you know, oh, we're what we're mitigating or what we're reducing are the impacts of homelessness, which you can understand. Oh, okay, like you are providing, you know, employment, providing people with resources, mm-hmm. supporting. You can also look at it as we're removing the
trappings
removing
of
these
poverty.
These people, and you know, the way that it's framed, maybe by like Keith Wilson, at least in the lead up to this amendment, was we are removing a bunch of hazardous trash, a bunch of hazardous waste.
Yep.
That
can't have that on the street.
Can't have that in the street.
And that's what you heard from a lot of people who testified. People who live in District 4, some people who live downtown, some people who are like, oh, I have to go downtown for pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. Please don't stop funding this program. It's the only thing in this city that's working, or it's finally starting to work, guys. Don't defund it.
Yeah. It's improving public safety. It's making the city more beautiful place, more desirable for people to move in. It's helping how this crisis is impacting me, which is this sort of like removing the visible impacts. It's also maybe a little dehumanizing.
Oh, certainly, certainly. And something I found really interesting is how sort of the argument both sides are laying claim to this idea that what I'm saying is compassionate and what you're saying is cruel.
Mm-hmm.
That by reducing the amount of sweeps, because to be clear, this program would still have like $10 to $12 million mm-hmm. for the next fiscal. By reducing the amounts of sweeps, you're leaving people out there to die, and that's inhumane, and you can't do that to people. And this is a public health crisis, and I'm trying to fix it by moving people around. And then it's like, well, people, we don't have resources to get people into housing, and yada yada yada. It's not fair for us, and it's expensive and doesn't fix anything to just take all of their stuff, throw it in a garbage bag, put it in a truck, and tell them good luck, start over.
And importantly, I guess, in this conversation, it's not these sweeps are not just moving people around, but it's also moving people around with the threat of arrest.
Right, and that's a new component
of
it.
So there is this kind of
threat of a week in jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which you know, the sweeps during the pandemic were similarly kind of caught up in this rhetoric as well, the push and the pull of it all. But there wasn't this idea that just for the mere fact of being homeless that you could end up in jail. And
I don't think we've tried this before, but that might be the solution. Is just, have we thought of criminalizing the problem? It's a novel new idea that I think could take the nation by storm.
I mean, yeah, we have. But there's a acknowledgement even from somebody like the Multnomah County Sheriff that we can't arrest our way out of this problem. Like, also,
yeah,
Oregon
famously has a very
Multnomah County Jail where people don't die under mysterious circumstances. Sorry for being glib, but like, it's not
the state of Oregon where we have a lot of defense attorneys,
public defenders. They're like ready to go. They're looking for more cases. Really,
yeah,
no,
frankly,
we don't. People are languishing in a pretrial process because there aren't enough public defenders. And one other thing I want to make mention of, which maybe I've said on this show, maybe I haven't, but the first week of enforcement, first week in November, they were touting all of these stats, right? They got around 40 people to accept going to one of the overnight shelter sites. They warned like 80 people mm-hmm. that, hey, you're not supposed to be camping here. They ticketed, I believe, like 8 people or something for violating the camping ban, and 40 people were arrested, but none of them for the camping ban mm-hmm. itself.
All for previous previous crimes.
Outstanding warrants, right? And so I think when you hear that, you're like, oh, good. So-and-so, they probably stabbed somebody.
They got the bad guys.
Armed robbery. Yeah. They've been on the run this whole time.
That's right, on the lam.
That's kind of what it sounds like. But a lot of the time when folks are like living outside, it's like a failure to appear. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a traffic ticket that they no longer have a residence that they get mail
Maybe
at to like know
a,
about.
A crime of desperation as
crime
well.
Crime of desperation could be like, you know, eviction proceedings, unpaid rent that mm-hmm. they're trying to get you back in for. So all of those things can, like, over time amount to that sort of thing. And so, like, arresting 40 people in a... That's a number that I find
the cycle
disturbing.
Of violence, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah.
Recirculating them through the criminal justice system, which famously is a sort of a nice pedestal, empowering pedestal
yeah.
up.
Yeah, lifts people right out of it. So all of this to say, the conversation is a bummer, no matter how you slice it. But it doesn't feel that we're getting closer to a solution to the problem. And in fact, things are getting worse? Question mark.
Interesting.
I don't. That's my. Well, I don't want to fearmonger about it because I think it is within our power to change things whenever we see fit. But it's. It's.
But I would say
to hear all that vitriol renewed is tough.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously, yeah. I think that's.
Because I'm not saying we shouldn't be cleaning stuff up. I think we should, but I also think we should try to focus on housing people
right.
because that would actually make
cleaning
this go
stuff
away.
Up. I think you know as you're speaking to
which Murillo's amendment clarifies it wouldn't cut any of those programs. So much of the conversation was like, you guys want there to be needles and human wastes on every cobblestone. And it's like, no, wait, sorry. The letter of it says that it should not impact those programs, but okay.
No, the two are being very unfairly, very cruelly lumped together.
Yeah.
You know, again, that term of impact reduction.
Yeah.
I think it's, it can be read in so many different ways, but at the end of the day, it is reducing the impact of these people by removing them from sight, removing them from mind, and in doing so, putting them in far greater harm. And it really requires kind of a complete reframing. I think, like, and until that's done, and you're going to see people come out and voice their fury at these programs when they are unable to dissociate these like harms and like this like you know like human waste you know like drug paraphernalia and stuff from you know the people that are also like suffering and impacted by like they don't see you know like houses people as people that deserve also this kind of like fair treatment
and dignity
yeah. and safety that they're like asking that these people are asking for.
And here's the thing, it doesn't even necessarily have to come out of like it's possible that we could do better without cutting this budget, or we could move things around in this budget that doesn't have to be, you know, we could put 20 million more towards trash cleanup. We could scrub every tile in the city with a toothbrush if we really wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not saying we
can't
do this.
Shines like the Chrysler building.
Yeah.
Recalling my fourth grade Annie performance.
Oh, who were you, Annie?
I was the butler, whatever his name, Mr. Butler.
Mr. That can't be it.
Bob the Butler.
Bob the Butler, sure.
Butler
sure.
from Annie.
Well, are you...
Which we had a... the Butler from Annie.
Let's see.
From Annie. No way. Frank Butler. No, that's Drake. I'm sorry.
Wow. I mean, just one of Reed's many roles. He can't even really recall all of the wonderful
Evening,
sort of
governor.
What did it say? Trampling the boards? That can't be right.
I'm sorry?
About being in a play.
Trampling the boards?
That seems like it's not it.
This is like an this is an idiom drawn out of time and space. This is an idiom that has not yet been created, but responds to an answer we have not yet to a question we've not yet posed.
And that's what makes it so interesting. We get, can I tell you what? If I could offer one criticism boards of this otherwise perfect show, I think you and I get really caught up on idioms pretty frequently.
Mm. That's why we need like sort of an idiom intern.
Idiom intern.
Someone that feeds us idioms, because otherwise we're left to our own devices. Someone that feeds us idiots.
Well,
the genius box consumes idiots.
Feed
me with idiots.
I want to leave time to get into the call-in segment too, but I want to mention as well, in case folks didn't see, and you should have feelings about it, I hope. The tread the boards. Thank you, Nate. Mm. Okay, I'm not crazy. Nate, our engineer, just clarified tread the boards.
Tread the boards. I was treading the boards in fourth grade.
Yeah, you were. The Portland Police Association, the union for Portland's cops, mm-hmm. is putting forward a ballot measure to reroute 25% of the money from the Portland Clean Energy Fund tax to hire
more climate response advocates.
Try again.
To hire more actors.
Nope, actually 400 more cops.
Oh.
Bummer.
Huh. So, oh.
This,
you know, it's oddly in some ways oddly similar to the first article, yeah. to our first story, the thought of diverting funds away from a revenue stream to something in this case maybe a little less productive.
We need
more cops.
Just level set with me. Please.
Every other town has 2.4 cops per individual. Portland has 1.2 cops per individual.
That's what the other one.
If we add 400 cops, then we have exactly the same number per ratio of police officers to.
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right that's part of their rationale on this. I mean, PSEF, the Portland Clean Energy Fund, is a 1% tax on like massive retailers, and it's hugely successful. It's made a lot of money. Everybody in the city wants to get their grubby little mitts on it to fund all of our underfunded programs. And, you know, we can be like, oh, PSEF, it's taking too much money from Walmart. It's taking too much money from Target. Nike. Nike's paying taxes in this town. We can't have that.
It's a dangerous capital gains tax on some of our most vital residents, including
global mega corporations.
Whoever's got the wallet for national corporations, Kroger, with over $1 billion
try to get clean energy programs going here.
I believe Zoran Mamdanian talking about a similar tax in New York City called it like an error on their balance sheet.
Would totally be overlooked, but it's a huge fund that's been raided in the past that everybody wants.
Error on the balance sheet becomes the most the most vital funding source for the entire city of Portland.
Yeah,
something that every single in the previous city council, everyone was scrambling to help it fill.
They're like,
all the stuff.
This program's outside. Does that count?
Yeah, well, this program is impacted by the climate in that we breathe air in this program.
We breathe air. Can we use some more? Please. We're gonna have to lay off so many people. It's like that's bad. Of course, we should fix that. But also, here's my
thing. It's a climate piggy bank.
I don't think that this is a great use of those funds.
Oh, really?
No, I don't think so.
Althea, would your thoughts change on that if you were to understand that you're funding this kind of police officer?
Oh, it's a lady cop on a bike.
It's a bike cop. I'm sorry, not the. I wasn't. It was the bike part of it.
Okay.
That's well, the bike renewable. Part,
that is
renewable cop.
Renewable cop.
Sustainable cop.
Okay, interesting.
I liked. I'm sorry. I'm showing. I realize this is a verbal medium, but I'm showing a picture from the. Should I say where it's from?
No.
No. Okay. It's an interesting.
No, you can if you want. We were looking at the Willamette Week, but there's also an OPP article about
it now.
There
is an OPP article, but they interestingly select a picture of a bike cop.
I think that's a compelling case for hiring. Hiring 400 cops, buying 400 bikes.
It's just an interesting. It's just an interesting picture to select in rerouting climate tax revenue to police.
A couple things to level set. One, every year the Portland Police Bureau is like, we need to hire more cops. Mm-hmm. And can we have more money to do that, please?
And the city
and every
says,
year the city says, yeah,
yes,
of course.
Of course.
Here's millions more dollars. And has that worked so far to hire more cops meaningfully? No. But that's okay.
That's okay.
We're taking our time. But do we need...
What they need is, I believe, just a little more money.
So much more money. And actually, I'm not sure the math works out on that.
We just need to... We need to expand our umbrella from both coasts of the United States and all of its surrounding territories to perhaps like an interplanetary sort of search for more cops. Like, yeah, we won't just post ads in Virginia. We'll post ads. We'll just like send a beacon out, one of those, like that golden record that we send to
outside Pluto,
with, yeah, with, hey, the... now hiring $7,000 bonus, Portland Police.
And mind you, Portland Police Bureau, not usually in a budget shortfall. They've got plenty of dough to work with.
I believe what was Bob Day's reaction to the diverting $2 million from the police
that,
budget
that they
to
didn't
parks
ask for, yeah, so that they could clean up, they could have trash collection in the parks over the summer. He's like, and this is like that really long city council meeting. It went to like midnight. He's like in his kitchen, and they're like, what? So what would you use it for? Police Chief Bob Day. He's like, you know, I don't know.
Fund?
I don't know what we're going to use it for, but we got to have it.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
There's a lot of birthdays in the Portland Police Bureau. And
we would like to kind of up the amount of pizza parties.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. You're going to just have everyone eat plain cheese.
We could spring for pepperoni. Okay. This is Portland, Oregon.
We're the pizza capital of the United States. You're saying we're not going to patronize one of our fine pizza places?
It's
gluten-free people, so you have to get gluten-free pizza.
Right.
Some people like a Neapolitan style pizza. They're like big deep dish lovers.
I have one more thing to say. Can I say one more thing before we get into pizza?
That's actually not a topic of the show.
Well, I just want to say, like, part of the reason that PCF is so flush is that it's a successful tax on wealthy corporations.
Yeah.
So, crazy idea. I don't know why no one's talking about it. We could just pass another tax like
expand
that and fund like transportation. We could have we could have not done the parks levy. We could have passed a tax on another 0.05 tax on major retailers.
It's not like city councilors proposed such a thing and it was struck down.
They have, or they? What do you mean?
Didn't Steve Novick and maybe Murillo propose an addition to the PCF?
Oh yeah,
tax?
They were shopping that around.
0.2% onto the PCF.
That's
tax.
Right. I forgot about that, guys.
It's been proposed and it was struck down. And
struck down feels like it's a court thing. It was just voted down.
I'm sorry, voted down, struck down. I'm sorry. Yeah, struck down in the
people,
height of its
people
life.
Freaked out that, oh no, all of our major retailers are going to leave. Except, oh no, they didn't leave last time.
I just think it's so funny because, yeah, exactly. You hear consistently Portland's high taxes are driving out the wealthy core of the city, the thought leaders of the city. Mm. And all the suffering engendered by these cruel, cruel taxes. And then you have this fund created by PCF, and Althea, who is it that is one of the people pushing to let's use this nice fund to fund Portland Police?
It's the Portland Police Association and the guy who now owns Big Pink.
It's Jeff Swickard from Big Pink.
So yeah, he's sort of I think he owns like car dealerships or something. He's got some dough, obviously, to buy that building.
Swickard Auto?
Something like that. So, you know, there's some money behind the ballot measure for sure. Reed, I wonder.
It's just funny because, on principle, I'm sure these people 100% against the idea of PCF. But hey, while it's here, might as well use it. Put it to good use.
Let's get more cops out there. That'll really turn things around. As if we had more cops. I would like for us to take a quick little musical break, and then we're going to come back for calls. Are you good with that? You have to be.
Seeing as my back is against the wall, I have no other choice than to accept.
You're listening to Genius Box on KBOO Radio. We'll be back in just a moment.
Must be a sucker for it.
we're back. This is Genius Box on KBOO Radio. I'm Althea. I'm here with Reed. Say hello.
Hello.
Thank you. A little bit of save it for later.
Althea's prodding me with a poker.
Yeah. Well, I remembered this time. Normally, I'm like reaching uh-huh. across the Genius Box to nudge you. Guys, we're in the second part of the show. We want you to call in. We're talking about lateral thinking, creative solutions.
Ooh.
We're pinned in by a lot of stupid things. Mm-hmm. How do we
fund 400 more cops?
How do we fund 400 more cops? That's what we want you to call.
Divert money away from solving the climate crisis.
And can I tell you, that actually might fit the bill, unfortunately. But, you know, where they want you to zig, how do we zag? You know, that's kind of what I want folks to call in about. 503-231-8187.
Where they want us to zag.
Seven.
How do we flip it back around and zig on them?
Exactly. 100%. We have Jeremy on the line. I think Jeremy might have something about the previous segment. So let's hear it. Hey, Jeremy.
Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. Well, I had several things about several segments.
Sure.
Anyway, I am not a huge fan of the way the city of Portland spends its money. I live right near Benson High, and I watched them spend $250 million on that. If you ever told me before I bought a house that I don't vote against bonds, but I can't vote for them because I can't stand the way the city spends its money. You know, there's large groups of Portland, parents who have kids in the school who can't vote for these bonds either because they know something about construction. And when Portland Public Schools throws their money at Anderson Construction, which is the largest and obviously best connected, company in town, and then watches them throw a huge amount of money away. The same thing I think is happening with the way they spend their money on the homeless. I've seen figures as high as $57,000 is what one of those homeless places, I think they throw you out at 5 a.m. So presumably if they let you in at 5 p.m. and then throw you out at 5 a.m. How can you spend $57,000 on that? No, that's a $3,000 a month apartment. So I really don't understand how they're spending the money. And I'm rather suspicious of it. I'm also not in love with the way the police department spends its money. That's what I was saying. So Portland does actually have a fairly high number, a fairly low number of police officers based on the population. I think the number of police officers has been right around 1,000 is considered full capacity, and the population of Portland's gone up, I think, 150 or 200,000 in the last 20 years, and the number of what's considered full force for the police department hasn't gone up. So that we are theoretically understaffed, but since crime is down so much, I don't see that hiring a whole bunch more cops is going to do any good.
Right.
So I don't really get where all this is going. The thing I would like to suggest about homelessness, and I voted for Wilson, which I severely regret. It's not like I should have voted for anybody else. Clearly he's, I think he was trying to brand his corporation in a different way. I mean, that's a whole nother story about him using recycled weird energy and trying to come out as Mr. Ecology Trucking, whereas actually he's as full of garbage as anyway, I'm babbling here. But the thing I'd like to suggest in terms of homelessness seems to clearly be from a variety of other cities, some sort of tiny house solution, which mm-hmm. doesn't really seem to have been tried to the extent that it should have been. And so if all of Wilson's money that has gone into these ludicrous 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. things, which nobody seems to like, but were to go into tiny houses, I think we might see better results. We certainly couldn't see worse results.
Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate you bringing that up. I think the when talking about tiny houses, there were the TAS sites, the temporary alternative shelter sites is kind of what they were calling those. And the you know, they measure sort of the stability of people staying in there in those tiny houses and then moving on from them kind of like a year later, 2 years later. And they were seeing good results on that. But it is, I think it is kind of expensive, but like, it's there's not like a cheap way to do it. And if there is, should we be doing that? Like, that's, those are people's lives we're talking about.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you, Jeremy. Appreciate the call.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Folks, if you want to call in, we are talking about
lateral thinking.
Lateral thinking. Thinking outside the box.
Outside the box.
Thinking outside the bun, even. Do you have an example of, like, I don't know, have you done this in your life? We would love to know. Maybe some of these sort of getting around previous obstacles, successful or unsuccessful.
Yeah.
Last week, Eliza regaled us with a story of her making dandelion leaf pesto as sort of a creative solution, creative solution to her, you know, the weeds in her yard. And it was a disaster. So, and that's okay. Sometimes it's a disaster.
Short-term disaster.
Short-term disaster. Long-term lesson.
Lesson.
Totally.
Oh, I was going to say, what's the opposite of disaster? Success.
503-231-8187. We would love to hear from you.
Well, yeah, I mean, to Jeremy's point, I can't, I guess I, funding sources, the way money is spent by the city, you know, it's I can't really weigh in on that, but I can say more broadly, the decision to divert resources, money, people to, really, as we've talked about, criminalizing homelessness, that would be, I'd lump that in the not lateral, not expansionary thinking category. Yeah. And there are other ways of resolving the crisis that are more supportive of the people that are, you know, victims of, as we, you know, see, or like larger systems of you know, that impoverish people. And it's I think it's well understood, and I think Keith Wilson would say these are not personal problems. Homelessness is not a personal problem, it's a systemic problem. And hey, if you want to criminalize something, we had a lot of opportunity in 2008, 2009, the banking crisis, to perhaps criminalize actual criminal activities that resulted in homelessness. And those were perhaps not taken. But I think to criminalize the personal act of being homeless is maybe a way of thinking that we should put it in a little
in the safety deposit box.
Safety deposit box forever. And I'm walking away.
Well, to think about, like, what is the confines of the conversation that we're having, and how do we, I like recognizing what are some of like the assumed limitations on what we are not able to do, and then sort of looking beyond that and questioning, like, are those limitations real? And if so, can we like go around them as opposed to having to like punch through them?
Do we have to forcibly remove people from their place of residence in order to clean up, to improve the safety of their living and the living of others around them?
I was also thinking about, you know, with people talk about tax burden, and particularly tax burden on homeowners, which is not insignificant in this town. And, you know, the level of taxes and the level of services that people are able to experience in Portland, like there's a real feeling that those things are mismatched. But we want to do ambitious things. We need to retrofit the high schools. They've got asbestos and they're going to fall down if the earthquake happens. That's bad.
If only there was a way to
but like the
impose a tax that is a little slight mark in someone's tax sheet. And,
exactly. And if we really shouldn't be almost a billion dollars
of money. Unfortunately, there's no way of doing that.
Yeah.
Of putting a 0.2% tax and funding free bus service in the city.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they're talking about in New York. But yeah, like, why, if we're squeezing, you know, homeowners so hard and that people are feeling like they're living so marginal, they don't have the money to spare to like spend on these things, then let's go to where the money is. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I wonder where that money is.
And that's been fully like extracted from the conversation that folks are having.
Yeah.
That, and you know, maybe it shouldn't be. If we want to fund things, and maybe it shouldn't necessarily have to come from, you know, bonds and things and levies and things like that. Just an idea. Just putting it
out
there.
Just a thought. Because, yeah, I mean, I think you're getting to, I mean, like, people have a right to feel angry at the situation of, you know, like, mass impoverishment of all like the you know, the visible effects of all these like systemic injustices. And it's, where do you direct that anger? And is it, you know, is it the people that suffer under it, or is it at
the structures that continue to perpetuate it?
And not just structures, but people who make a, I would use an expletive here,
no expletives,
blank amount of money,
ton amount
of money from it.
A huge ton.
It just doesn't roll off the tongue, like.
No, not really.
Blank.
But we've got Tawasi on the line. Hi, Tawasi.
Hi, Tawasi.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. You know, I was listening to the early part of the show where you're talking about the opposition to what I think of as common sense. And I couldn't help but notice the name that didn't get brought up, which is obviously who's pulling the strings of Keith Wilson, which is Downtown Clean and Safe. So, you know, all of the, you know, cronyism, not all of it, but a lot, is to do with the Downtown Business Alliance, a.k.a. the Chamber, and when something that is going to have a beneficial impact on the city comes up, they rush in to grab any of the money. And so when you talk about that pot of funds that they have their hands in, they're going to have a very immediate and powerful response, because they spend so much money on lawyers and lobbyists and ad agencies and politicians. So, you know, I feel like if we're going to have lateral thinking and be appropriate with the people's goodwill, which is represented by the money that they take off of us, then we ought to use the money appropriately. It costs about $10,000 to do a single camp eviction. And that money goes into the hands of the very people that need to be held accountable, because they're the ones running the incinerators. They're doing the hazmat cleanups. And their same company in other cities has been found to incinerate people who were incidentally taken in as biohazard. So we need to be really, really conscientious of which contracts the city is spending money on. Because it's not just the urban alchemy, it's also rapid response BioClean. These companies, California companies, are known to be heartless, cruel, and inefficient. And yet that's who we're giving our money to. And it's not on behest of the people who actually have to live with the consequences of misappropriation. It's actually at the behest of Arlington Club people who spend their weekends in their Vienna townhomes and drinking their Cabernets in Newburgh, you know, when they're not in San Francisco or New York. They don't live in Portland. They just don't want to see what's happening to the city because of their cruelty. And, you know, it's a choice to ingratiate ourselves to these companies and people like Downtown Clean and Safe, the Chamber, and the Portland Police Bureau. Because at the end of the day, this is the exact same mafia-style cronyism that we saw in Chicago when the Chicago police were so corrupt way back when. And the same thing with Chicago politicians. It's exactly the same. All of the corruption that was rooted out in the East in the 1930s, the corruption inside of the city that the mafia was doing, that's the operating system for Portland. It hasn't ever changed. That's why you see the Sunshine Division handing out food. They're fascist, racist police who hate the poor. And yet they're the ones handing out food. Why? Because they want to have their hand in the pot. It's the same thing with Downtown Queen and Safe, the Chamber. They hate the poor, but they want to have their hand in the pot of the money that is to go to the poor. So instead of creating solutions, lateral thinking, where we recognize the problem, create a solution, and address the outcome, they just want to go Nancy Reagan on our whole city. You can't, any person who gets arrested in Portland for being homeless is still homeless when they get out of jail. They just have less of a chance of getting a job or a house because of discrimination against, quote, criminals. So, you know, I beseech people to disavow Downtown Clean and Safe in the Chamber, and specifically to, you know, go to their places of comfort and call them out over their horrific human moral failings. Because at the end of the day, there's a small group of people who are making these choices for all of us, and they have names and addresses. And they, you know, they have their hand up the blankety blank of Keith Wilson. He may as well be Ted Wheeler, honestly.
Yeah. Tawassi, thank you so much for calling in. I want to respond to just some of the stuff that you said and leave the phone lines open in case other folks want to call. But you brought up a lot of really good things. I also want to mention, for folks who may not know about Downtown Clean and Safe and its relationship to the Business Alliance and where they what they do with city funds, there is reporting from Street Roots in February of 2024. This is back when Jeremiah Hayden was over there, that, you know, he was investigating this kind of relationship, talking about these enhanced service districts. So if you're interested in that topic, that's where I learned a lot about it. So just to like give more context and give people the ability to dig into that issue, if they're interested off of what Tawassi was saying.
I think they've, yeah, and Street Roots has also done good reporting on Urban Alchemy, some of those service providers that do the camp sweeps and yeah. and process people's belongings.
I want to let people know we do have a few minutes left here. If you want to call in, please 503-231-8187. We are, you know, discussing local politics, of course, but also thinking about, you know, how do we get out of the box, the constraints that we are currently in.
Realizing that we've imposed ourselves in a sort of genius box in this.
Yeah. Well, we on the show have to stay in the genius box.
You're in the box.
But you guys could like look at the outside of the box and tell us what kind of our presumptions are.
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of it. There were some examples.
Allegory of the cave style.
Yes. Thank you. Well, no. Maybe.
That's a cave, not a box.
Yeah, that's the only flaw in that sort of comparison here. I wanted to give some examples of some lateral thinking. Ooh. when we're talking about this. Part of what sparked this as an idea for us to talk was during the SNAP lapse, you know, local grocery stores were wanting to help people on SNAP, but the government, you know, could they be bothered to open? No, but they were sending out, the USDA sending out emails, you can't offer people discounts if they're on SNAP. But when you're talking to local grocery stores, like, this is their neighbors. And it's also their business that they're not going to be able to do if people aren't able to afford food. So the question was, how do you do it? And for some small grocers in Oregon, they were saying, hey, there's a SNAP discount. And on their social media, they're saying, hey, try not to use it if you don't need it, but just verbally ask for it at the checkout. Or there was another grocery store who printed up a bunch of coupons but made them available at the food bank. So if you were going to the food bank, you could get one of the coupons. So, right, it's like, it is technically a coupon or a discount that anybody could use, would not run afoul of the law, but still is trying to direct it towards the need, right? And there's a bunch of other, I don't know, like things that we were brainstorming that kind of fall under this umbrella in a sense of, you know, here's a restraint or constraint of some respect. Like, I think the bus stop near me should have a bench. And I think it's screwed up that the freaking city won't put a bench there. And it's like, so true. The city should put a bench there. But also, like, I could put a bench there, you know?
You put a bench there.
You could just, and this is like the whole sort of like thought behind guerrilla urbanism.
Guerrilla urbanism.
if you think something should be there, like, just build it, you know?
And
you're allowed.
Will come.
Build it and they will come. I've been so caught up
on
idioms
today. Baseball
fields
to bus stop benches.
Yeah, or, I mean, I think Eliza was telling me the other week about, like, a stop sign situation where it's like, this intersection really needs a stop sign. Somebody just made one. And ultimately, it ended up getting replaced by one from the city.
They put one in because people have, yeah, it's becomes part of the urban infrastructure and it responds to any of the people that people need and that, yeah.
Yeah, getting outside those
confines.
Sometimes
you know better than
and you can move faster than city government can.
And you can move faster than the city can.
And I think, you know, it doesn't negate any of the complaints, the valid complaints that people have about how city government operates. But if we just get, you know, and federal government too, like if we just get pinned in on how that constrains us, all we do is fight those constraints instead of like getting out of it. You know what I mean? I also think of, you know, the programs that the Black Panthers run, including, of course, here in Portland, that Black Portlanders were not able to get good health care or good dental care. The Black Panthers started running their own clinic here in town that was specifically for that purpose. Same thing with breakfast programs. That if the system isn't serving you, okay, great. Like, I mean, not great, obviously, but let's pivot. Let's figure it out anyway, you know? That's kind of the at least political lateral thinking. I think you can also do that in your life as well as just sort of like the
reframe.
Your
life is politics.
Whoa, I don't know if I'm ready for that. Especially because politics is such a bummer. But
well, politics as we...
As we know it,
as it's practiced as like an institution.
Yeah, but so many of the things that we take for granted as being, well, of course it's always this way. This is how it works. Somebody like came up with that at some particular time. Things that we think are like a terrific part of our infrastructure, like things like libraries or whatever, or the little free libraries, or the riffs on that we see. That's just somebody just decided, and then other people thought it was a good idea and started iterating on it. You know. Maybe it's ask forgiveness instead of permission times. You know what I mean? maybe we should stop. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have four minutes, right?
Yeah. Tell me what you pulled out a book.
Well, I pulled out a book because I was, I'm doing a rare Genius Box book recommendation.
Okay.
On the subject of lateral thinking and maybe in kind of expanding, not just expanding what we think is the possible, but also like reintroducing what would in the present day be like sort of like radical ideas that were actually quite commonplace at a different time, a different place. I've been reading Studs Terkel's Hard Times. Really interesting book.
What's the subhead on that?
An Oral History of the Great Depression. Studs Terkel was like a radio host, kind of like ourselves, journalist, had collected all of these, all of this testimony, really interesting sort of life experience from people in the Great Depression, and puts together this really interesting, oral history, kind of tying them together loosely by topics, by circumstances, by kind of like yet helping you to understand what people were thinking during the Great Depression. And it's written, or this copy is put out, the one that I have is put out in the 1980s, which feels very much like the present day in a lot of ways, in how he frames it in relation to the Great Depression. He's talking about, you have this like new financialized like system where there's a bunch of money generated, but yet there's also this like complete, like there's this kind of like this really strange division between that vision of success and then like visible poverty that he's experiencing. And his point is like, there's not really any understanding or like representation of that poverty in any way to address it. That's different than the Great Depression. People had, people who were suffering had a very like, they were very politicized. There was a lot of organizing around it. Can't really get into it anymore because we're running out of time, but I definitely recommend people to read it. A lot of really interesting stories
with maybe some lessons for today.
Well,
thank you for the book Well, we'll come up with a name for Reed's book segment. Reed's Reads, that's what it is, of course. We actually had talked about that before. We're going to wrap things up here on Genius Box. I want to say thank you to Nate, our engineer. Thank you to everybody who called, everybody who's listening. Thank you to Reed.
Thanks to Althea.
And we'll be back next time.
Bye-bye.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
I'm Don Jacobson, one of the hosts of Moving On, here every Friday right after the noon news. Moving On isn't the only place to hear folk music